So I really warmly welcome you to this third day, especially that after two heavy days, to have people at this hour with this light, I think it's really deserve a big thanks. Before I go into the introduction of the day, I just remind you that we take notes collaboratively on the IRC channel of LGRU, and we later will sync the notes from the chat to the recordings that are made with the audio here. So it's really a kind of archive in real time. So if you can drop a few comments, transcript a part, or just share opinions while we are speaking, it will be extremely useful to process after the sound that is recorded. Okay, so today we will try to concentrate on the question of basically how do we organize collaboration, and also how collaboration self-organize, and especially we will focus on the language we use, the vocabularies we use, how the importance of how we name things to be understood, to share understanding and to deal with misunderstanding, because I think that's also something that happens quite a lot in the collaborative projects in which we are. But when we talk about vocabularies, we want to extend the idea of vocabularies also to conventions in interface design, because it also speaks to us, no? And also conventions in frameworks, for instance. Like, when we use a framework, there are a lot of presets that somehow script and influence for a large part how we will collaborate using this framework. So we will go through a series of presentations this morning that will present vocabularies that talk to each other. And these vocabularies can be the vocabularies of academics talking to each other, people from a background in legal studies that talk to bioengineers, and using a web platform to do so. We will see how linguists talk with font designers and the other way around, but also how to programs talk to programs, because that's also an exchange of vocabularies. And also a proposal in the talks will be to think of the convergence of grammars. So this is quite a very interesting morning, I think, quite dense. And the people that will present, I will give a few words so that you know also who will be after me at this table. But first, I would like to say that it's very important to see that these three people, in their very different ways, are people that are really extremely committed to what they do. And I have the chance to know them, and I think that besides what they will say, I think it's also the experience they carry with them, and that they bring here that will be also important to take into account. So the first speaker after this introduction will be Nathalie Trussard. Nathalie has worked for more than 10 years as an academic scholar in philosophy. Her researches are devoted both to metaphysics and objects, with a high technical and scientific dimension. So these are objects like genetically modified organisms or new technologies of surveillance installed in prisons. She's also interested in objects about which the power knowledge's relations and the statutes of reality are put to the test. Nathalie will, for a talk, use an experience that somehow we shared, because she, and this is how we met, she was part of several interdisciplinary projects, but with one in particular, with bioengineers, jurists, social scientists, and even developers. That's the connection. And she will particularly talk today about her experience in an academic situation for the website of imbroglio.be. So you can imagine that the issue of vocabulary in an imbroglio is a key issue. Then we will listen to and talk to Denis Mogoyo-Jacquery. Denis is involved in various Congolese language projects. He's a font engineer. I'm mixed up in my notes. So he's a language and speech technologist and photographer, working as the co-manager of the open source Deja Vu Font project. And the Deja Vu Font project aims to provide a large amount of language support. And Denis is involved in the African language localization and awareness. And he collaborates, he also collaborated on the Floss manual about font design, which is about to be released. Then we'll have Pierre Marchand. So Pierre is a collaborator of open source publishing for a few years now. We met Pierre because we were really interested to know more about Scribus, and that's through long IRC chat between Femke and Pierre that we realized the whole planet of Scribus, but also Pierre is a prolific software developer with many interesting projects and projects that have a lot, of course, to do with fonts, but also with language, and also projects that have a quality of questioning themselves. So when you use, especially in the recent project of Pierre that he will present today, there is a something that I think is really inspiring, that when you use the tool, you're always forced to question yourself and your relationship to the tools. We'll let Pierre unveil the details of this project himself. But before we listen to these three people, I'm afraid you will have to follow my own meanderings into a question that is important for me, since I'm in contact with the Libre Graphics community, and that is my love and hate, or my problematic interest for the SVG format. So I will try to talk about SVG not in the sense of what it graphically provides to developers and designers, because I think that the proof is done that it's a very interesting format with an incredible richness. But I will try to talk about SVG as a site of attachment for many questions, many projects, many groups, many people, but also many agents. If the screen, oh. It's on the wrong the wrong screen. Okay, how do I do that? Lost in screens. Okay, that looks nice. So just to recall the acronym, SVG stands for Scalable Vector Graphics, a modularized language for describing two-dimensional vector and mixed vector raster graphics in XML. I will concentrate in the last word of this sentence and creates changes when you think of a graphical format. So basically when people talk about XML, what they emphasize is that this is a universal format. So you're supposed with XML to be able to somehow be understood by every agent that implements this specification. And the fact that SVG is using an XML language is an open specification makes it universal, as the W3C says, in the sense that it will be available on a very wide range of devices. Like you can see, and it's true that today you can see SVG on your telephone, you can see SVG on your pad, on your screen, and you can use it to print. It's also a format that is text, so basically the text within the image will be parsed through search engines, so the content, the textual content within the image would still make sense for a software that do not see. And of course it's universal in this sense also, because then for somebody who does not see, it's also possible to extract and somehow read the textual content of an image. So what is really interesting is that we are talking about a graphical format, but we are talking about text is text is text is text. And of course, as being text and implementing like every language can find its way through SVG. There is no contortion to make to have a huge variety of languages to fit in the format. Yesterday, during the work session in the afternoon about the reader, Marie has at some point given us the pleasure to read a text of Pierre Lévy, And she extracted this quote that I wanted to share with you, because I think that this quote is really touching the points, like the way the W3C like tries to somehow describe how they want to work for the web. And the text is in French. I will translate some part. I think also that it's important that while translating, I will do it slowly. It also helps to have more attention to the to certain phrasing. So basically, it says that we can consider that the fragmentation and the opacity, the contemporary fragmentation and opacity of cyberspace, are due to the absence of a system of semantic coordinates, a common system of semantic coordinates. So it's, you compare in the text the lack of semantic coordinates for the web to the lack of geographical conventions 1 century ago. And the fact that the geographic conventions were hardly established was really making difficult to travel and to connect to people at other parts of the globe. And so the quote ends saying that a protocol for a collective intelligence establishing standard exchanges of semantic metadata seems preferable to a sort of it's UNO, ONU, administrating of in a centralized fashion the new economy of information. So basically, what he says is that if we are able to ourselves set up a series of semantic coordinates that are common for the people who are using the web, we may be able to avoid a centralized governance, centralized bureaucratic governance of the web. While this seems promising and extremely close to a lot of things said in a very dry way by the W3C, like when you think of standard format, the ontology project that's behind, the kind of standardization, like to find a common semantic for describing formats, protocols, and so on and so forth. While it seems really close to that and really idealistic, the following questions that I have will try to show how this is much more complex than it seems. I would like to, as we are talking about vocabularies, I extracted a few words that are really used when we talk about format, open format standards. And one of the format, that, one of the word I see very often is compliance. And as I'm not an English speaker, I was going to the Oxford Dictionary online, and the first definition of compliance is the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. And what is really interesting is that the examples that are given just after are quite negative, like it's called of excessive acquiescence, the appalling compliance with government views shown by the Commission. So it's really interesting to see how we are using a word like standard compliance, which is usually something extremely positive in the world of open source. But when you look at the dictionary, the first example of use is already quite quite a negative one. But what is really more interesting, and that for me is extremely inspiring, is when you see what it means in physics. It's the property of a material of undergoing elastic deformation, or of a gas, change in volume when subjected to an applied force. And in medicine, the ability of an organ to distend in response to applied pressure. So I would like to really contaminate our thinking of compliance with this notion of the resistance and the way we deal with force. No? So another with OSP we during LGM in Wroclaw we made the interview of the person who is responsible for the SVG format, Chris Lilly, and he wrote the introduction to a book called SVG Unleashed. It's a kind of Bible like this, written really in the early times of SVG, and it's kind of propaganda for the format, but a very interesting text. And the first paragraph ends with vendor neutral. And so what can it mean really when we are talking about vendor neutral, when we talk about a format? No? And it's because the vendors that are attached to the format, that decide to attach themselves to the format, can be really damageful for the use and the spread of the format. One of the obvious way is the way of how companies will, for a certain time, really support the format and create a whole environment for people to use it and develop it. But they also can change their mind and drop the project. And that's what happened in the early days of SVG. Basically, SVG was a format that was an early competitor of the Flash format. And at the time, Adobe was a competitor of Macromedia. And so for a while, Adobe developed a plugin and also tools to generate SVGs. And they were really interesting tools. Very early on, they really went very far in implementing a lot of functionalities. The fact is, when they bought Macromedia, their competitor, they suddenly changed their mind and stopped the support for the project. So basically, if I read my notes, in a 5 years time span, they passed from being the supporter to people who were somehow responsible for rendering a lot of SVG files that were written for their plugin with special additions that they had made. Like there was an API for scripting that was added to the SVG format, that suddenly were unlegible in other players, and that were unlegible in their players because they were not supporting further development. So they basically somehow enclosed a huge production of graphics into an obsolete plugins, and they refused to publish the source code. So it's really like a lockdown. Another very important aspect in how vendors can really harm the process is the patenting. So from this I will switch to this page. So I'm really sorry in this context of graphics to show you pages with blue links and yes, but you will see many of them. It's the whole process by which the W3C, when it releases a format like the SVG, basically how they work in order to avoid that the format they release infringe patents. And of course, whatever you do nowadays, you infringe patent. So what they do is that they try to have inboard in the W3C the patent holder and negotiate with them to be able to release the format and to ask them to ask the people to abandon somehow their right of claiming patent infringement. And so it's very interesting to see that so you see on the left the companies that are part of the W3C, and basically their decision to somehow make when they declare a patent that is related to the format. So it's really interesting because they do that early on before the format is being in use, so at least you can detect the problem before it starts. And then they have the choice between saying, okay, I just drop any claim and I don't want to be paid, or, and that's really something that we usually do not know about, they can claim something called RAND. And RAND, R-A-N-D, it's not random, it's reasonable and non-discriminatory patents. So it means that somehow they still can claim money for the infringement or for the fact that people are using the patents. So it's really something that is, it's really interesting to see that it's not because something is within, is validated through the W3C, that everything is safe. It's still always a work of neutralizing the effect of possible damage. And it's a constant negotiation. Yeah? So that's really interesting to see that it's a work that is done, and it's when we think about compliance, it's really like this effect of forces that is always to be remade. Okay. It's also interesting to see that it's a very complex issue, because in certain legislation, like in Spain, for instance, in Spain, the open standard that the state is using, for instance, do not accept RAND. So it's literally spelled in the law that open standards are royalty free. So it's a very interesting. I would really be interested to see a conflict happening there, because there are really multiple layers of legislation that can conflict. So the thing is then, how does this work in the W3C, and who is there to be able to have such a power? And I've been there, and I've been looking at how much it costs to be a member of the W3C, because of course you need to pay money. And so it's very nice also, because you understand that it's a lot of work. It's so money needs to come from somewhere. So when you have seen the list of the nice members, like Kodak, like Microsoft, like Apple, you understand that it's probably not really done for people like us. But we are wrong, because in order to promote a diverse membership that represents the interest of organizations around the world, W3C fees vary depending on the annual revenues, type and location of headquarters of an organization. So we can do the little exercise of seeing how an organization based in Brussels with less than 7 employees can has to pay. And of course, as they are very organized people, we have a fee calculator online that we will use. So I'm looking for Belgium from next year, show fees for this country. And so we see that if we are a for-profit organization, we need to pay 68,000 euros. All other organizations, including non-profit organizations and government agency, it's 7,800. But if we are non-profit with 10 or fewer employees and a revenue less than 2,250,000 euros and never been a W3C member, for less than 2,000 euros, we are. So it's a good idea. So it's really something to consider. Well, we need to consider also that you will have to pay some cost for flying around, for giving international phone calls, and probably pay some dinners, but more. It's still something that is much less difficult to access than we could think, no? But so much for universality, nevertheless. how am I time-wise?
10 minutes.
Okay. So I would like to talk now about this this idea of universality in a very practical sense. That this idea that basically once you have written in this format, it will be displayed everywhere, and that you have a kind of generalized access. And going through an early experiment we have made with Ludivine and Pierre, it's now 5 years ago, I think, we'll see how basically instead of being the mother tongue of all LibreGraphic application, it behaves more like a lingua franca, no? It's more like us talking English without being native English speaker, but using English to talk between each other, no? So maybe I will make this circulate. So what I will talk about is the process that led to the construction of this poster, so the cover of a magazine, so you can make it simple, because I don't have it in a good resolution. Basically, it's an experiment we made to somehow fetch the content of all the articles we had on the website of the Towards project, and somehow to pass from the database and CMS to a kind of intermediary format that would be the SVG, that would be then post-processed for being printed and released as a PDF. And so basically what we made is a shell script that would gather all these images and that would gather also all the text content and create this timeline. And you would have all the posts that would be aligned from the oldest one to the most recent ones. So what is interesting is to see somehow I dug out in my files and I found the Inkscape document. Like it's a stage. It's not the last stage, but it's a stage in between. I think it's quite important to zoom a bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, and as you see, we were experimenting a lot at this time with various elements, but especially we were working on the orientation of these lines to not have like a parallel row of lines, which we changed later. But this is really the moment where we were experimenting with these variations. We were experimenting with the possibility to use blocks of text in SVG and basic like, for instance, italics, trying to change the font, and this kind of minimal layout. And what you see, and that is still interesting to look at today, is to see how this this simple timeline with a few variations would differ so much in the different readers and implementations of the same specification. So for instance, if we look at what, and it's the most recent version of Firefox I have, so it's still unable to show the blocks of text that are contained into paraflows, for instance. So basically, the text disappears, and you see also the inclination of the lines have been ignored.
But there are people say that's not in the specification, so they don't implement it.
That's that's the same for Batik. For Batik, then you have, for instance, the text is rendered, but still the directions is ignored. And also, what's interesting is that there is a pattern in the central tube here. And this pattern appears a bit strangely, but it appears in Batik and doesn't appear in Firefox, and appears even differently in Inkscape. So it's very interesting to see that basically when we talk about universality, it's more a kind of horizon that is always further as time as you try to come near to it. And that's for me one of the big frustration in this kind of work, is that you basically when you start thinking in terms of universal format, all the differences in the implementations look like errors or frustration, no? And that's really something that I think when we do graphic design, when we think of a variety of software, and that we think that if they do not behave the same, then it's wrong. If they do not behave, it's our position that we need also to rethink. Yeah? Because I think that it's to put oneself in just like trying to somehow, if we start to bug reports, like behaving like the police of all the software. And I think that the potential for divergences, for differences, is so much more interesting than we could have such a more interesting relationship to it than just frustration. And so it's probably like when we speak to each other and we don't have a good English, the mistakes we make are really, most of the time, they're something that comes from our mother tongue, no? And it's really interesting that most of the time they are very rich mistakes, because they enrich the English, no? But of course, it needs to pay a lot of attention to the way we phrase the thing. It makes everything a bit slower. But I think that in a sense, we cannot consider that people who speak English as a lingua franca are just doing mistakes. They are also enriching the language. And it may be problematic in moments where you need really a 100% response, super clear and super fast, but in other circumstances, and we are responsible for the circumstances, we can make it interesting, and we can arrange the time for that. Then I would like to somehow conclude with the idea that somehow these standards and a format like SVG is something that somehow creates a distance. So it means that somehow for people doing one software, you don't need to go in the guts and the implementation of another software to be able to exchange an image, because the format is there, it's clearly defined. And so that's a very, I think, something that can be really interesting to somehow be able to share without having to all do the same thing the same way. But it by the way we implement and how far we implement a standard, we also define ourselves a distance to others. Like when we do only implement half the standard, of course it creates a distance with others. When we are nearly fully implementing it, it's easier to connect, you know? And and so the question is how closely do I comply? But we have to remember that complying is not just obeying, but it's also having this organic relationship with forces. It's at the same time we accept and resist. And that's really important to not neutralize this. That it's really in every project, the fact that we go as far as to a certain point in implementing standards is always time, it's always energy, it's always commitment, and it's always also accepting and resisting this. But it's also, I think, distance from, and for this, that's how I would like to end the presentation, because I think that's a very interesting thing, is that, for instance, Inkscape, who chose to really be a native SVG editor, so the native format of Inkscape is really heavily SVG, has managed to introduce within the format a certain distance, and it's a distance that is also historical, because before Inkscape existed, it came from another software that called Solipodi, and in the SVG file you will find at some point this word appearing, Solipodi or other, that plays like prefix. And what they are namespaces. It's basically, they are borrowing from other specification, and they are mixing within the format other ways of understanding graphic that complements most of the time what is in the specification. And so I think that if we take the word now out of its technical concept and just listen to it, namespace, I think that's a very nice way to
end and
switch to the next presentations.
Thank you.
Just to make up for that, I didn't even introduce Nicolas to you. someone so close that you forget. So this is Nicolas Malavé. He's working with Constance. And is membre extraordinaire of this thing. And I'm very happy to host this thing.
Thank you.
Do you have questions?
Do we have time?
Yeah,
wow.
Can you do quick questions? Like one or two, maybe?
I was wondering about the analogy with lingua franca. Like, lingua franca, like English, of course, is not the result of the same kind of standardization process which tries to be neutral or tries to be fair or tries to balance. It is the result of certain power relations that ended up with us all speaking English. It's not an effort to accommodate. In that sense, I guess it's actually very different.
Well, if you...
Or SVG might be more like...
If you look at the official statements of most colonial empires, they bring peace on earth, no?
And prosperity.
And prosperity and progress. And so they have all a noble goal. I'm not saying that a W3C is a colonial power. But what I mean is that if we only look at the language and the semantics they propose as a mother tongue rather than lingua franca, we may not understand all the power structures that are at play.
If you don't see that it's actually not a mother tongue for most, no, not this
part. Mm. I just comment that there's a really interesting discussion. I happened to catch the stream of her name is Sharon Adler. She was one of the members on the original SGML committee, which is great. She describes that it was five people, two printers, a lawyer, a guy from the IRS, and she and another person from Boeing.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there they really dismissed this. She claims now, I mean, it's 2010, talking about it, not, you know, universality was not part of the idea. But it's a really interesting discussion, which I think goes, I think the kind of key line that I took from that was this discussion of how you need strictness in the pipeline, but you have tolerance at the endpoints. Which was, it was actually all a very nuanced discussion about, you know, how actually you do need strictness to allow a kind of sharing. Because of course, what's horrible is when things break because of gray areas and they're done. I mean, also from kind of longevity point of view, because that was so big thing about Earth, and it was just making things that 10 years later would still, you know, be. But this whole kind of question, even of what is an error, why is an error, was clear in the discussion, not because you had this great split between the XML and the HTML, being
sort of strict and messy,
so, and it's interesting that that's still, happening. Mm. I think this compliance, the second definition of compliance is very interesting to think about when we think about standards.
Like, you need strictness?
Yeah.
But
you need some kind of rigidity,
but then actually you see that it's also the process of what is even considered an error and what needs to be an error.
Yeah.
And it brings the question for me to know how to engage. Because I didn't show, but Femke sent a link about, because now there is it's the end of a consultation for the next specification for SVG. And that's also a way to somehow bring things on the agenda. That must be also investigated, how it really works.
Yeah.